Hi, everybody. I'm Neil Smith.
Hi, this is Vic Morin, and we're your hosts for the NHL Wraparound Podcast. Join us for an exclusive virtual kickoff event for 1990 Forever, a five-part series commemorating the 30th anniversary of the New York Rangers Stanley Cup Championship, Thursday, June 6th, 6 p.m. Eastern, on Zoom.
There are limited spaces available, so go to NHLWraparound.com to sign up.
Welcome to the NHL Wraparound Podcast, featuring Neil Smith, President, General Manager of the 1994 Stanley Cup Champion New York Rangers, and longtime ESPN NHL veteran Vic Morin. Together, they share no-nonsense opinions on news and issues around the National Hockey League. Whether you're a casual or diehard fan, each episode of NHL Wraparound will leave you more informed. Now, here's your hosts, Neil and Vic.
Welcome to NHL Wraparound, Vic Morin and Neil Smith. And on today's show, we'll be speaking with the Deputy Commissioner of the National Hockey League, Mr. Bill Daly. And then after that chat, we're going to take a look at the coaching changes around the NHL and why that is such an unstable role in the world of hockey. But first, a word from Migray.
From Howdy Hughes, from Beliveau to Bedard, we're your source for game-worn jerseys. Go to MyGray.com, MEIGRAY.com, to start your collection today. Get real. Get it from MyGray.
And now it's time for our one-timer segment. Vic, what's up?
Well, something about the Tampa Bay Lightning that were eliminated in the first round for the second consecutive year, this time by the Florida Panthers. And this, of course, comes on the heels of three straight appearances in the Stanley Cup final. And I think people think all is lost with this franchise. And I don't quite think so. And here's why. They've got a lot of players that are under long-term deals at some very team-friendly money. Kucherov, Point, Cirelli, Paul, Hagel, Hedman, Sergachev, and even Vasilevskiy is part of this long term. The only player that is not signed beyond next season is Victor Hedman. So this club is in fairly good shape with its core. I think the problem for Julian Brisebois over the last couple of years is they haven't been quite able to really replicate the bottom six players. You know, Glendening, Mott, Janot, Chaffee, and Essamont, they're not Barkley, Goodrow, Pat Maroon, Yanni Gourde, Blake Coleman, and Ross Colton. Those were staples in that bottom six. So I believe if the team is able to really strengthen the bottom six going forward, and remember, they're going to have a healthy Sergachev again next year, I think they're going to be okay. Of course, the big question mark, does Steven Stamkos re-sign? Both sides have indicated they want to get a deal done. And right now, the Lightning only have $75 million committed to next year's cap, which is expected to go up to 87.7. So I believe they get this done, this team still has a few kicks of the can left.
And everybody wants to see Steven Stamkos stay in a Lightning uniform. I think no matter where you are in the league, it would be hard to envision Steven Stamkos not being with the Lightning. But my one-timer this week, Vic, is I went to the Islanders game a few nights ago when they went into double overtime against the Carolina Hurricanes, eventually winning that game in overtime. And you know what? I had forgotten how romantic the playoff overtime really is, how captivating it is, how thrilling it is. You know, we have put overtime into the regular season for a long time now, and now we've gone down to the 3-on-3 steeplechase type of game that goes for 5 minutes, where it's keep away, keep away, keep away, and tire the other side out, and then try to rush down and It doesn't at all replicate playoff overtime. There's something magical about playoff overtime when it's 5-on-5, when a penalty is terrifying to the fans of one team or the other because it's sudden death. And if you get through 20 minutes, you got to go another 20 minutes. Now, let me tell you how confusing it is for those that are sort of peripheral fans. I had a lot of people ask me at that game, well, when is the shootout? And I said, there's no shootout. Well, when will they stop playing the overtime? I said, as soon as someone scores. Well, how long can it go on? I said, as long as it has to go on. But you've got fans now that have never seen playoff overtime, so they only understand regular season overtime and regular season shootouts. And just like I said a number of weeks ago, that the shootout had ruined the romance of the penalty shot. When we were kids, if you got to see a penalty shot, I mean, you know, go wake the kid out of bed. There's a penalty shot. Get down here. And the same thing, you know, with overtime. It is just a magical part of the National Hockey League that only comes during the playoffs. So thrilling, so exciting. And that's my one timer. I just wish I could see more overtime playoff hockey.
Absolutely. And I think you and I are both of the belief that when these long overtimes go deep into the night, you feel committed like the players to stay till the very end and be a warrior.
Yeah, you have to. Wait, what are you leaving now? Are you kidding me? Come on.
That's right. No leaving. Up all night. This one-timer segment has been brought to you by the Ninsel Wealth Partners. Our goal is to be your primary source of financial advice. Our mission is to provide quality strategies customized to your needs. We recognize that you place your trust in our ability to help you achieve your goals. To us, there's no greater honor, and without question, there's no greater responsibility.
Well, Vic, now it's my extreme pleasure to welcome in the Deputy Commissioner of the National Hockey League, Bill Daly. Bill and I go way, 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 way back. And before there even was a Deputy Commissioner position, I think, Bill. But welcome to the podcast and thanks for giving us some of your time.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Vic. I'm happy to be here.
I guess we got to start right away with the Utah situation, because it's such a current topic, and I'm not even well apprised to it, meaning I read a little bit about it, but it happened so quickly. And could you just give us a little bit of an overview of how that happened and how it happened in our mind anyway, so fast?
It did happen fast. I will attest to that. It was a busy time period. Look, we've been struggling with finding a long-term arena solution for the Arizona Coyotes for some time right now. They were unceremoniously kicked out of Gila River Arena a couple of years ago when they refused to enter into a long-term extension. I think Gila River was looking for a 20-year extension. And obviously the Coyotes had different ideas with respect to what their arena future should look like. And we're always intent on building a state-of-the-art hockey arena in the Valley, probably in a more friendly location than Gila River was in Glendale. And so when the two parties didn't see eye to eye, the Coyotes really got evicted from Gila River. They found a what we hoped was a short-term temporary home at ASU in Mullet Arena, which, as you guys know, is a college arena for a Division I ASU program now, but formerly even a club hockey program. So it's not by any stretch of the imagination an NHL suitable facility. It was kind of quaint and exciting to watch games there. I had the opportunity to watch a couple games there live, and it was an exciting environment. They filled the building, but filling the building meant putting 4,800 people in the stands with virtually no amenities. So that was never going to be a long-term solution for the Coyotes. Alex Morello, the owner of the franchise and his team put together plans, which I thought were kind of very fan-friendly, public-friendly plans to build a state-of-the-art arena in Tempe, Arizona. That initiative was subject to a public referendum in Tempe. I think we all were under the impression that it was something that certainly could pass the electorate and that there would be strong support for a public works project that promised to remediate a landfill area in Tempe and replace it with kind of a state-of-the-art public venue at no cost to the taxpayer. So we actually thought it was a no-brainer. I think the Coyotes felt it was a no-brainer. But when we got to the polls, the electorate in Tempe, which is a relatively small number of people, I think the total number of voting may have been 26, 27,000 in total. And when the results came back, they had lost the referendum by a couple thousand votes and basically were out of luck in terms of their plans for a new arena. They immediately began working on alternatives. We were patient as they worked with alternatives, although what I'd say is the time the time kind of kept slipping. The timelines kept slipping. And I think we were concerned. The commissioner was concerned. I think our ownership was concerned that given the fact that the timelines kept getting backed up, that we would have no certainty with respect to their ability to solve the arena problem. And the earliest any degree of certainty could have come would have been sometime this summer. Which we felt was a big risk to take. So we began working on this alternative possibility. I'd say early in the new year, Ryan Smith and his group, the Smith Entertainment Group out of Utah, had been in contact with us over the course of a number of years. And had expressed their strong interest in and desire for an NHL franchise. They came back to us in January and reiterated that interest as part of kind of a some debt financing bond legislation that was being proposed in Salt Lake as part of a downtown renovation. They thought there was presented a good opportunity to re-express and reinforce their interest in hockey. So they engaged again with us again earlier this year. And because we were dealing with the Arizona situation and were somewhat unsatisfied with how that was playing out, we felt like we had an opportunity to work with Ryan. We took his temperature on his ability to take a club sooner rather than later, as opposed to an expansion franchise. He indicated to us after doing a little due diligence that he was he'd be interested in pursuing that. And on that basis, we put together what we put together. Which was an offer to Alex to essentially go in and inactive with his Coyotes franchise while he solves the arena situation, get paid a fair amount of money for his franchise in the interim. And then if he's able to solve the arena issue and puts up a state-of-the-art arena in Arizona, he has the ability to buy back into the league and have the Coyotes go active again. And that is what he's working on currently. So it turned out to be knock on wood, and nothing's closed yet. We have signed documents, but we don't have a closing. It's turned out to be a solution that has worked on both ends. Obviously, I think it solves an immediate problem, which didn't have kind of a near-term resolution in sight. And I think it gives Alex and the Coyotes an opportunity to do what they need to do, take the time they need to take to solve the arena problem and bring the Coyotes back to Arizona on an active basis. So at least to this point, we're happy with the solution.
And Bill, you know, I know when expansion teams usually come in or new teams come in, this isn't really an expansion. A new team comes in, they usually have a year or two to get everything set up and get going, because there's so many things that fans don't think about and even hockey people don't really think about. They take for granted, which is the garments for the players are all made way in advance. The color schemes all decided upon. The palettes have to be looked at. There's a lot of ordering of stuff that goes on in during the season for the following season. And that's not to mention a myriad of other things. And so when I hear people talking about, well, what's the name going to be and what's the colors going to be and this, I can't imagine. And this is, by the way, somewhat of a question. I can't imagine that they'll have that ready to start next season. Like I was saying to Vic off to the side that it wouldn't surprise me if they were the Utah Hockey Club, just because they can't get everything done in time. Am I off on that? Or is there more time than I think there is?
No, I think you're bang on all those points. It's an enormous undertaking that that Utah is kind of faced with in a very, very short time period, a very short runway to accomplish all the things that they need to accomplish. Obviously, we have the historical example of Winnipeg having been transferred from Atlanta, and that announcement was made, I believe, sometime in May, preceding the year they were there. But I think in that case, Mark Chipman, the owner in Winnipeg, was already operating a professional hockey franchise in Manitoba, in Winnipeg, kind of a longtime American Hockey League franchise, Manitoba Moose. And he had the infrastructure in place with respect to how he was going to run the hockey team going forward, the NHL team. So he had an enormous amount of work to do to get the Jets ready to play in their first season. But I would say it pales in comparison to what Ryan Smith is dealing with in Utah and what he'll have to deal with. You know, we're boots on the ground. We're all hands on deck trying to assist him. We have a big organization at the NHL. Obviously, we have some fellow clubs who have offered him assistance, which I'm sure he'll take them up on. So everybody is in a helping mode, but it is a big project. And with respect to uniforms and name, and all the things you mentioned, Neil, you're spot on in terms of the difficulties in doing that in a short time period and clearing all the things you need to clear. You know, in Seattle and Las Vegas, it really took years to go through those processes as opposed to a couple of months. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least that they have a temporary name in the short term as they look toward kind of a longer term brand image and identity.
And Bill, I wanted to ask you and just confirm this to our listeners that the Arizona Coyotes, the markings, the names, they are going to stay in Arizona, I think, along with the records, if I am not mistaken.
Yep, that's correct. All the IP, including the ability to sell merchandise in the Arizona market, remains with Alex and the Coyotes franchise, at least for the duration of his ability to reactivate this franchise. Look, we're working with them, we're supporting them. We want them to be successful in what they're doing. So the Coyotes will continue to exist in some form in the Arizona marketplace. They also have maintained the rights to their AHL franchise, the Tucson Roadrunners. So they own that franchise and the rights to that franchise and its identity. They hope to use it beneficially as an asset to keep, you know, interest in hockey vibrant in Arizona while they work on the arena situation. In terms of its history, as you guys know, the Coyotes actually own the Winnipeg Jets history. The Winnipeg Jets is interested in getting its history back. But at least in the short term, that is one of the assets that was purchased when the Coyotes were originally purchased by Burke and Gluckstern way back in the middle of the 90s, and the team was relocated to Arizona. They relocated with the Jets history. So that is an asset that the Coyotes continue to own, and they'll own it for as long as they own it.
And does that include team records, statistics? Where are they going? Are they staying with and in Arizona, or do they transfer to Utah?
No, they stay in Arizona. That Utah is starting from scratch. It's the establishment of a new franchise. Obviously, the hockey assets have been transferred, but Utah is a first-time standalone NHL franchise.
So it's really good for the league that the geographical footprint now gets expanded a little bit further. The league stays at 32 teams, but obviously we have heard over the years there's interest in Atlanta. Houston's name comes up. The second team in Toronto, Hamilton, Quebec City. I'm not going to ask you where the league is looking to go to, but long term, 10, 12 years down the road, is there a number that is comfortable to settle at? Because I don't think you want to get too big. 32 feels like a good number, but you always want to grow. So is there a number that you and Commissioner Bettman are comfortable with?
So I'm sure the answer is yes. I'm sure there's a number beyond which we wouldn't be comfortable going. I don't think it's 32. So you know, at least in the short term, I don't think that's a concern of the league. A couple of things at issue here. One is the supply of talent, and a concern maybe in the late 80s and early 90s that there wasn't enough talent to man this number of teams. Well, I think the talent pool is as broad and as deep as it's ever been. And I don't think there's any concern among our general managers or among our clubs in terms of a lack or dearth of talent to stock these teams. So I don't think talent dilution or talent, the inability to access talent is a real concern. Obviously, we have a lot more markets from which we access talent currently, whether it be Europe and, you know, about 30% of our player base now. And the U.S. is up to about 30% of our player base as well. With Canadian content in kind of the low 40% range. So we have talent, and that's not a concern. The other thing I'd point out is while there's not another major professional sports league in North America that's at over 32, when you look at our U.S. footprint versus our Canadian footprint, we're the only professional sports league with 7 markets in Canada. Which means we only have 25 markets in the U.S. And when you drill down a little further than that, it's really not 25 markets because you got 3 clubs in New York and 2 clubs in L.A. So I think you're down to about 23 markets. So that makes us smaller in terms of having a U.S. footprint than any of the other major professional sports leagues in North America. And that gives us room to utilize additional North American markets that other professional sports may not have the ability to use currently.
That's terrific.
Yeah, that is terrific. And that's something I had never thought about, was that the footprint in the United States is not nearly what I think it is or thought it was before you just said that. I didn't take out the Canadian teams and do that. So get to learn something every day. Bill, do you mind sticking around for another few minutes so we can get on to a couple other topics?
Of course. Happy to do it.
Okay. Thanks very much, and we'll be right back.
Over these last few months, we have been talking about the versatility of Dior jeans. Dior has so many styles and rinses, and personally, I'm loving the performance denim. Dior is the perfect mix of comfort, style, and stretch. Dior makes stretch performance denim and lifestyle apparel for men and women with elevated styles that stand apart and are made to last. They're made from natural fibers for high stretch, breathability, and moisture absorption. The temperature regulating fabrics keep you fresh, cool, and dry, and the antibacterial treatment means less washing. Plus, Dior is committed to sustainability. They use materials like plants and recycled plastic to create the fabric. Trust us, you will be reaching for your Dior jeans again and again, so order yours today. Check out Dior's flagship stores in LA or Denver, or shop online at shopdoor.com/NHLfan. Right now, our listeners get 20% off site-wide when you use our exclusive URL, shopdoor.com/NHLfan. This is an amazing deal, so don't wait to get 20% off. Go now to shopdoor.com/NHLfan.
Bill, I got to ask you, one of the things that I was in the league for a little bit of, I think, maybe I wasn't, was video review. And I think most of it, certainly I wasn't in the league for when those decisions were made at the board and at the GM level. It seems to me now when you watch a game or you're at a game, there's a lot of video review. Maybe there's a number that you have that's statistically true, and it just seems more to me than what the stats will actually bear out. But are we going towards, because technology has sort of gotten out of the bag now, right? It's once the genie gets out, how do you put it back in again? You can't just say, well, we're getting rid of technology. I mean, obviously you can't. Does it just keep going and keep going as we have more technology to do more things? Or do you think that we're at a point now where we're covering everything that we could possibly video review?
Well, I think it's the right question. And it is a matter that there's a high level of concern and scrutiny around the league on, particularly, you know, out of our office, you know, whether it be Coley or Gary. You know, this is a Pandora's box that you don't want to, or a rabbit hole you don't want to go too far down, right? So we still think that the appropriate place for video review is a very limited number of circumstances. You know, the two ones where we have kind of coaches challenge, or most prominent coaches challenge now, are the offside and the goalie interference. I think, you know, the challenges for offsides or goals after offsides has become what I think we would all hope all video challenges were, which is pretty black and white. And there's not a lot of gray in the black and white. Usually the cameras can give us good enough angles to make kind of black and white definitive calls. Now, there are exceptions to every rule, right? So now we have this issue of whether the player had possession when he was going across the line and otherwise looked offside, but because he had possession, it wasn't offside. So that does indicate, or that introduce a matter of discretion, which I think some managers would rather there not be. But I would say we've gotten the offside video review pretty down. And usually when there's a challenge to an offside goal or a claim of offsides before a goal, you know, that's about a 90-something percent success rate. So usually the video coaches and the coaching staffs have kind of nailed that one. The more you know, discretionary call is the goaltender interference call. Certainly that's a judgment call. It's a judgment call on the ice, and then ultimately becomes a judgment call by the replay officials. You know, we went a number of years back to having that call made out of one place, which is the Situation Room in Toronto. staffed by a consistent set of people who are the ones who are asked to make that call all the time. And I think that adds consistency to the process, but it's still a discretionary call. And I think you saw it last night in the Florida-Tampa Bay game a little bit. I think we had two calls and you know, both of them, you know, I wouldn't call them controversial, but certainly either one of them probably could have gone either way. And that's why the call on the ice becomes so important, because the call on the ice is your starting point. And if the call is no goal, then, you know, you're going to, and which is kind of what happened in the second situation last night, then you're going to need kind of pretty convincing video evidence that there wasn't goaltender interference, that the goaltender did have an opportunity to play the puck, fair opportunity to play the puck. And you know, in last night's situation, the video review crew did not see that there was sufficient evidence to kind of overturn a no-call goal on the ice. So those are, you know, and then we have some other video reviews that we've kind of added recently. Supposed to be more definitive in nature and less discretionary. And so I think to the extent there's any further expansion, it'll be limited. And it will be only in areas where we think that the video review technology will give you black and white answers as opposed to gray ones. So we're cautious in this area. We're reluctant sometimes to take those steps. I do think there's an appetite among our fan base and other professional sports fan bases that if you have the ability to get a call right and it's wrong on the ice, that you should be able to get it right. So I think there's an appetite for using the technology, but I think there are limits to how you should use it.
I just wanted to add on to you to that, Bill. I'm sure that the managers and the fans never wanted to get to the point where every call, every penalty that's made could be, you know, reviewed. Like if you go back to the videotape, he really didn't trip him, you know, and I guess we all want to see that there's a human factor to this. And if we see at home that he didn't really trip him, but he got a tripping penalty, I don't think we mind, because we understand there's going to be human error at times.
It's a human game, and there is human error, and I agree with you, Neil. And look, we're not the only sports that struggle with the balance and what the appropriate balance. You know, people forget that the NFL, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago introduced kind of a challenge to pass interference calls, which went out of control in its first year, and they've scrapped it, and they scrapped it almost immediately, and people don't seem to remember that. So it's not as if we're the only ones who have to navigate this area and try to come up with the right answers.
Bill, but just to expand on that a little bit in terms of other areas, the one area that it appears that broadcasters in particular want to see with replay are pucks that are shot over the glass. Are they deflected? Did they actually tip the glass before going over, thus prompting a delay game penalty? And then pucks that happen to hit the netting and that for some reason or another, the four officials don't see. Do you see either of those two instances coming into the into play for replay down the road?
Well, the netting is already in the rules. If there's if there should have been a stoppage and there isn't and a goal is scored, you can get that reviewed and reversed. You don't see it often because our officials don't usually miss those. But obviously, it's glaring when they do, and that is, we do have the ability to correct that. In terms of puck over the glass, that was discussed at our most recent general managers meeting. I do think there's an appetite that when a penalty is called for puck over the glass, and there's definitive video evidence of the puck having deflected either off the boards, the glass, or an opponent's or somebody's stick, that there's an ability to overturn those penalties and call down the penalties. That's the only way it would work. It's not challenging to say that something that wasn't called a penalty should have been a penalty. It's only the reverse. If a player is penalized a minor penalty and there's video evidence that the puck was deflected on the way out of the playing surface, there's going to be the ability to have that penalty brought down.
Last one for me. It was just announced that there's going to be a two-year deal for Amazon in Canada for Monday Night NHL. And we've already seen Amazon and with the NFL. And we see that there's Apple with MLB. How do you see the future of consumption of the NHL evolving? And is this deal with Amazon kind of the first step to, put it on the likes of an Amazon?
Well, I think it's the latest stage of an evolution that's been happening over decades, really, right? In terms of how our product is produced, distributed from various platforms in various different ways. I think, the streaming platform has become very, very mainstream and probably fairly recently, right? Within the last 5 years, I'd say, it's become an available option for teams and for leagues as a reliable way to distribute your product on a different platform. I think that trend is going to continue. I think that obviously is competition for cable distributors, but also over the air distributors. I mean, it's a dynamic marketplace, ever evolving, and I think obviously streaming of sports is here to stay.
Wow. Well, Bill, I'm going to let you go and say thank you again for coming on and being here. I could go on all day, to be honest with you. I've got, as you're talking, I'm thinking, I should ask him this and I should have, but I could go all day long. And I know you don't have that time and neither do we. And thank you for doing this. It's an honor to have you on here and a privilege. And we've always been great friends. You've been a great friend to me for a long, long time. And now that you're definitely over saving Sakic, we can stay friends.
Well, thank you, and thank you, Vic. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it spending some time with you guys.
Thank you.
Well, we really appreciate you. Thank you. Time now for a quick shout out to our sponsor. NHL Wraparound is brought to you by MyGray, your source for game worn jerseys. Head to MyGray.com to get your collection started today. Get real. Get it from MyGray. NHL Wraparound subscribers can take 10% off any hockey jersey when they order at MyGray.com and use the coupon code WRAP10. Don't forget that coupon code WRAP10.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. Neil, we've got a website.
Hooray! We've been working and working and working to get this thing going. We brought in all the family members even to work on it.
Well, they have, and finally, where launched, it is www.nhlwraparound.com. And on there, you will be able to find all of our episodes, both audio and video. We have show notes. We have some bio info on our guests. We're going to have polls, as usual with any website out there. We're a work in progress, and we are evolving. So really pleased to announce that we are up and running. And for advertisers, if you are interested in advertising in either the website itself or on our show, there's an area that you can click on and contact us. So again, very excited to get this up and running, and hopefully it will be a source for our listeners for many years to come. So transitioning off of that, my friend. So you want to be a head coach in the NHL?
Not me.
10 coaches, 7 during the season and 3 since the season has ended, meaning the regular season, have been let go. And Spencer Carberry, the first-year head coach of the Washington Capitals, is now the 16th most tenured coach in the NHL, meaning he has actually cracked the top half and he was hired 11 months ago. And Neil, I know that, you know, during your term as general manager of the New York Rangers, you only had five head coaches in those years and some under very different circumstance. What has changed in the climate of all of these coaching changes and the win, you know, the needing to win now mindset? How has it changed, you know, over the last 30 or so years?
You know, I think so many things have changed that, you know, this is a long answer because times have changed.
It was a long question. By that, so.
Yeah. Long question, long answer. But the so many things have changed. I can tell you, Vic, that in my day as general manager, and I was just telling Rich Torrey this the other night, you know, whenever you have a position that you have had a mentor, you try to imitate your mentor, I think, at least I have in my life. And Bill Torrey was one of my mentors, and he had Al Arbor there the whole time he was the general manager of the Islanders, like one coach. I mean, yes, he started with Phil Goyette and then it for only not even a season in the beginning, but then it was Al Arbor for forever. And I thought that's the way you were supposed to do it. In other words, get a coach and, you know, he should be there a long, long time. And that was the way it was. And it wasn't a good thing for a general manager to fire a coach. In those days, if you fired the coach, everybody said, well, guess who's next? You better get this right because guess who's next? And that doesn't seem to be the way it is now at all. And I think the reason that it's changed is a lot of different little pieces to that. One is definitely the salary cap and definitely the fact that you have to have a lot of young players on the team so that the salaries at that end of your roster are lower, because at the other end of your roster, the veteran end, they're going to be higher and they're going to be eating up a lot of your cap. So you've got to be careful there. The other thing is that you're dealing with no trade clauses now. You're dealing with no movement clauses. You're dealing with astronomical salaries as compared to the 90s. And that all leads to the fact that the coach has a voice, but you can only, there's only one coach and there's 22 players. You can't, a lot of them, you can't move, you can't trade, you can't do anything with. So there's no threat hanging over them. They're being paid a ton of money. There's nothing for them to be really scared of. Even the game has changed so you don't have to be scared when you go on the ice because there's hardly any hitting anymore compared to the old days. And you've only got one real thing you can do now as an owner, as a manager, as a president, and that is change the voice. And as I always said, you have a bear trainer who's training bears to dance. When those bears stop dancing, they get a new trainer. And it's the same thing in hockey. When the bears stop dancing, the coach gets fired. It's not fair. It's not right. But that's what happens. And that's really my answer to today's plethora of firings and changes, that they don't know where else to go to change things when they're not working.
You see this getting even worse now that the salary cap is predicted to rise. I mean, you know, we've been pretty flat really ever since COVID. And now next season, it's going to go up by $4.2 million. And then it's projected to go up the year after that. Do you see this getting even worse than it is for NHL head coaches?
I think it could get worse. You only have 50% of the league that makes the playoffs. And if you don't make the playoffs, everybody's ticked off. So, you know, I mean, Seattle, for example, there's the latest firing. They were in the playoffs and won a round. And yet this year they missed the playoffs and the coach is gone. I also think, Vic, to be honest with you, that it's the mentality of this era's players that are all born in somewhere between 84 and 04 that play in the league right about now. You know, if you're born in 85, you're 39 years old now, you're thought of as a grizzled old veteran, even though to you and me, that would be a youngster. And if you're born in 02, 03, 04, you're a teenager. So I shouldn't say 02, 03. If you're born in 04, 05, you're a teenager. And I think this era of kids are different than the kids were then. I mean, this is a much more technology age. They consume everything off of their phone. They play video games in their room when they're on the road. They don't have as much interaction because they're always on their phones. It's a different human to get through to than it was in those days. And who's trying to get through to them? The people that aren't from that era. So they're trying to figure it out as they go along. How do I get through to these guys? How do I get through to this era of young men that I've got to coach?
I think one interesting hiring here, though, is, you know, you consider these old voices and teams that haven't made the playoffs and are under enormous pressure to get into the tournament. The Buffalo Sabres have not made the Stanley Cup playoffs since 2011. And to just put a little bit of scope on that, entering this year's tournament, six franchises have played at least 100 postseason games since the Sabres last made the postseason. So the question here is, the Sabres are going really back to their past, to the guy that last got them into the postseason. Can a team really go to the recycle bin like this in the hope of, you know, finding past magic to get into the tournament?
With Lindy Ruff, he did a real good job, as you know, in New Jersey last season. Including going, you know, making a huge turnaround from the season before, and then even beating the Rangers in the first round, which is, you know, you know that rivalry, to beat them was humongous. And then this year came and everything went wrong. They didn't get goaltending and a lot of different injuries. And now Lindy Ruff's not a good coach anymore. He was a great coach last season. They were all chanting, "Sorry, Lindy," at him, because they had been calling for his firing early in the season. And by the end of the season last year, they're serenading him with "Sorry, Lindy." Now this season again, because again, the Bears don't dance, or the Bears are hurt. The trainer gets fired. And so what I'm saying about Lindy going to Buffalo is, it's not completely a recycle bin thing, because he has very recently had success, meaning last season. If you were going back and getting somebody that hadn't had any success and had been out of the NHL for a while, I get it. I think that's recycling. It'll be interesting to see how this works. Did the Buffalo Sabres do this part for PR as well? I mean, Lindy's loved in Buffalo. Perhaps there was a little bit of that in there. But I still think Lindy's a good coach in the NHL.
And I think, you know, perhaps this is the one guy that can really get them over the top, because they have some good personnel on that club. And it seems like, you know, they always get right to the cusp and then they cannot get across the finish line. So I think realistically, Ruff has a really good opportunity to be a hero there once again.
Yeah, he does. And his career where it all started for him, really, or where we remember it starting. Roger Nielsen's really the one that gave Lindy his break when he brought him to Florida Panthers with him and so on. And Lindy had played for Roger with our New York Rangers in 89-90. So they already knew each other. It's funny how things go all the way back.
I'm going to predict, when we do our preview show in the fall, I'm going to have Buffalo making the playoffs, and I think Ruff's going to be a big reason why.
Well, I can't wait. We've got a long time till then, but I'll be happy to see that.
Absolutely. This is the Human Side of the Story, brought to you by UBS Financial Services Incorporated. And, you know, we're thrilled to have Deputy Commissioner Bill Daley on with us earlier in the program. And I know both of us did a lot of, you know, we know a lot of what he does. But when I looked up his bio, it's more than I ever dreamed of.
Yeah, Bill is a extremely busy executive in the NHL office. And when I say extremely, I mean literally day after day after day after day. People don't realize, the fans certainly don't realize, that this isn't just, his job isn't just to go and hand out the Prince of Wales Trophy to the Eastern Conference champs and the Clarence Campbell Bowl to the Western Conference champs that you see on TV. Bill has a litany of things that he does for the National Hockey League. Let me read you a few of them. First of all, he was named Deputy Commissioner in 2005. So he's almost 20 years into this role that he has under Commissioner Bettman. And amongst the many things that he does is he's a chief negotiator of the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, when it's renegotiated, when it expires. It expired and they had to negotiate it in 04, 05. We lost that entire season, if you remember. And then again in 12, 13, he's the league negotiator on the, and also a liaison and communicator with the NHLPA, which is half the collective bargaining agreement. One half obviously is the league. The other half is the NHLPA. You know, Bill played a major role in two of the largest and most significant commercial contracts with television right holders, as you're very familiar with, Vic. He plays a big role in negotiating. Now it's with ESPN and TNT in Canada. A number of years ago, Sportsnet paid a lot of money to be the distributor of hockey in Canada. He plays a big role in that, in negotiating those. He's a caretaker of the relationship between International Hockey Federation and the IIHF and the National Hockey League, so that when you hear about the league going to the Olympics, when you hear about the league having the World Cup of Hockey, the Global Series, or the China Games, Bill was involved heavily in all of those things. He had his fingers and his signature on all of those things. And as I said, in 2017, he spearheaded the league's international strategy that brought NHL players to China for the first ever preseason games in Beijing and Shanghai, and then the players going back to Europe. The other thing that he's in charge of is the transfer agreements between all of the major European ice hockey federations, so that when players leave there, there's always a contractual relationship between the two, so that the league makes sure that you're not abusing a European contract, like just walking out on them and signing in the NHL. And they have an agreement where an NHL player can't just walk out on his NHL team and go over to Europe. So Bill does all this and has three children and is married and has a family and lives in New Jersey and is just a great guy, as you can see or you can hear on our podcast. And he's been doing this a long time. He's been Gary Bettman's right-hand man for a long time, but he is busy 24/7 and doing a great job.
And anybody that thinks that being second in command is merely a figurehead position, we would invite you to go up, read his bio, and it is just an extraordinary amount of things that he does for the NHL, and the league is certainly better off for it. My human side is dedicated to a gentleman that we lost last week, Bob Cole, longtime voice for CBC and Hockey Night in Canada, passed away at the age of 90 and served as a play-by-play man for 50 years. He worked at least one game in the Stanley Cup Finals for 28 seasons between 1980 and 2008, and had that distinctive, oh, baby. His memorable calls were a Paul Henderson goal in the 1972 Summit Series. And then in 1974, 2 years later, when the Soviet Red Army came to play in Philadelphia and got roughed up a little bit, and the Red Army briefly left the ice, and he said, "They're going home. They're going home." And there was just something about his call that was so distinctive. He didn't overcall the game. He let the picture speak, but boy, he brought really something special to really help augment every telecast. And the interesting thing that I read about after he passed was that in 1956, he met the legendary Foster Hewitt, made an impromptu visit to Hewitt's office, brought his audition tape, and like so many of us in the industry, just wanted to get discovered. And Hewitt listened to the tape and spoke with him for 2 hours. And that was really the moment that kind of gave him the inspiration to continue on this path of being a play-by-play man. And sure enough, 40 years later in 1996, Bob Cole won the Foster Hewitt Award for Excellence in hockey broadcasting. I only had the opportunity to meet him maybe once or twice during a Stanley Cup final. And for me, it was just such a privilege to go up to him and to tell him how much I enjoyed his work. And Neil, I know for you, you grew up listening to him as well. And I'm sure that he really provided you some special memories.
Well, absolutely. And I got to talk to him many times. As you know, I was around the Toronto press box a lot in various different times in my career in broadcasting or in hockey. And I even do a Bob Cole impersonation. Sure. And if you want to hear it, I'll be glad to give it to you. Because
it's going to be better than mine.
His color commentator was always Harry Neal. Right? You remember that Harry Neal was always one? And he used to say, a couple of two old rivals here at a nine, the Detroit Red Wings and the Toronto Maple Leafs, Harry, and they'll be going at it in any moment. So he was great. And you know what? When there are certain voices, Vic, as you well know, and we've talked about, when you hear that voice, you go, uh-oh, it's a serious game. I hear that voice. So this means we're in for a good game.
And he always had that ability, like few announcers do, to make it feel big.
You're not kidding. Well, that's a great human side, Vic. And I want to take this time now to thank our sponsors, Doer, Migray, UBS, and Ninsel Financial Partners. And of course, thanks to all of you that listen or watch and send questions or comments to nhlwraparound@gmail.com. Don't forget what Vic said, or he'll be mad.
The website
is up and running at nhlwraparound.com. Make sure you go there just for his sake. I mean, just go look at it for his sake. And
you know, your bio picture is bigger than mine, so.
Oh, well, it should be. Anyway, thanks to everybody for tuning in. Thanks to our sponsors, Doer, Migray, UBS, and Ninsel Financial Partners. God bless. And we'll be another week into the playoffs when we join you next week.
Thanks for joining us on the NHL Wraparound Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date on all the NHL action.